Powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios Red Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from down under outside Brisbane, Australia, it's episode 14 of Primetime Jukebox. Tonight, the ladies take center stage as we celebrate women in music. And as always, Primetime Jukebox is sponsored by Perdomo Cigars. Awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand is consistently earning the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sunroom, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaragua Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo State Selection Vintage, the Perdomo Double Aged 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Aged, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. It's available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all the live streaming for the Primetime Network of shows is sponsored exclusively by Drew Estate. Well, welcome, everybody. This is Primetime Jukebox, a late July edition or mid-July edition 2020. This is Will Cooper. I am in the Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Red Stage, and I'm joined all the way around the world by my friend and colleague down under, Dave Burke.
Hey, Coop. Good to hear you. Good to see you.
It seems like it's been a while. It was kind of like, look at it, it's been a few weeks.
I think it's for listeners, for Primetime Jukebox listeners. We had a busy month last month because we had three shows.
Yeah, I mean, that was a busy month. And then we kind of took the first 2 weeks off this month.
Yeah.
So with the we had a holiday 1 week, and I think we couldn't do last week. So here we are today.
Here we are today. No, it's good. I'm excited for this show. I'm excited for this cigar. I told Coop the last time I had this cigar was when I had the original back in the cigar jukebox days. So why don't you fill us in on what we're smoking?
Well, this is actually, like you said, you've had the original, but this is the Freya 12. And the Freya 12 is a cigar that the 12 is a commemoration for Emma Victorson, who is the owner of Las Cumbres Tobacco, along with Jose Blanco. But Freya is the brand that Emma has been spearheading. The 12 was meant to commemorate her 12 years in the business back in 2016. It took a little while for the cigar to get out. It's a Churchill called the Brisingham. I don't know if
good,
I'm saying
good work.
Right. Yep. It measures 6x52. Now, Freya is a goddess, right? She's a Nordic goddess, right? And the Brisingham is a necklace that Freya would wear.
Okay.
Where it gets its name, and it's a big 7x52. Right. Now it's a different,
cigar.
Yeah, it's a different blend than the original Freya. The original Freya, actually for this blend, the 12, it uses a Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, Dominican Corojo binder, and a combination of Dominican Corojo, Dominican Criollo, and Piloto Cubana, and it's made at Hochi Blanco's factory. The original Freya. Slightly different blend. And that one I know was highlighted by had a Dominican wrapper with a Mexican San Andreas binder. So this is a very different cigar. The artwork is actually a little different. And if you kind of look at it, there's a little more green in here. There's a water scene on the band here, which is a little different. You won't notice the difference in the artwork unless you put this Freya 12 next to the original Freya. I was telling you that before the show. It's subtle enough, but they do look different.
I love the band.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it really is. It's like that oil painting art that they did. And I was telling Dave before the show, there's actually a, unfortunately, I didn't have any more left to send Dave. I had a lot of the Churchills. They released late last year a cigar, the Freya 12 Deblin, which is a 5x46 Corona in this.
No, it's good. I mean, so far, like, I started off, I lit it up before the show to have it sort of going a little bit. But no, it's really good. It's a lot smoother than I thought it was going to be. I don't know why I didn't think so. I mean, I was thinking the original blend.
Yeah, but that's right. Because you look at it, you would think it's the same cigar, like I said, unless you had some of the older ones next to you.
Yeah.
But no, it's a very different blend, yeah.
No, it's smooth. It's got good sort of like, I'm getting it like honey, cream, a bit of cracker. Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Yeah. And you know, I was mentioning that 5x46, they released that because of the Swedish market. This was a little bit, they loved this blend, and Emma took this cigar to Sweden, and they said, we love it, but it's too big when once it gets the cold months. So,
right.
So yeah, but this is the only, like, this is the original size that it came in, is this seven, this, it's almost a double Corona, really.
If it's you look big.
It's a big cigar, yeah.
But it's very smooth.
Yeah,
is what keeps coming to mind. It's a very smooth cigar.
It is.
I told Will, I'm not a Churchill smoker, generally, because I find that a lot of them, sort of by the time you get to about here, you know, that last third, they sort of run out of gas.
Yep.
So I'm excited to see what this is like by the end of the show.
Yeah, and we'll kind of touch base with a few in the middle. Now, you know, for some of our fans who may not be cigar people, right? I just want to mention who Emma is because I think it fits into the theme of the show. So the folks who know cigars, they know who Emma is, right? But folks who don't, Emma is the wife of Jose Blanco. He's one of the legendary figures in the cigar industry. He's worked at La Aurora, Hoy de Nicaragua, E.P. Carrillo. He had his own company for a while, which now Emma's running. And of course now he's with Fuente, right? But Emma's in her own right. She has a tobacco background. She worked for many years for Scandinavian Tobacco Group. She certainly has a lot of knowledge in here. And when Jose had formed his company, Las Cumbres, Emma was a big part of launching that company. And she got her own brand called Freya. So when we look at women in the cigar industry, Emma's really one of the, I would say, she's basically one of the most respected people. You know, as far as there's a lot of great females, don't get me wrong, but Emma's in that upper echelon, you know, especially when it comes to tobacco and cigar making and marketing. They you look at that, and Emma is looked on as a real leader in that area.
Oh, yeah, and this is an excellent, this is smoking really well, Coop, I have to say. It's a very good cigar. I remember I liked the original as well.
Yeah,
no, this is very good.
Yeah, you know, in the original, like I said, the original had that San Andreas binder, which gave it a little bite, actually, that one.
Yeah.
So this is a little smoother. I would definitely agree with you on that.
So do you know, now this is sort of, I mean, we'll get into the show proper in a minute.
Yeah.
But do you know, so was there like a break, or did they just redo the brand, or did the Freya stop for a while and then they came back? Like, do you know what the timeline of that was?
So what happened was Emma and Jose formed Las Cumbres Tobacco in 2014. Jose released his brand, Señoro, first.
Yep.
In 2015, Freya followed. And they both started building those lines. Jose made the decision to kind of leave his own company and go work for E.P. Carrillo. And I think a lot of it simply had to do with, I think Jose, he was happy to put his name on a cigar. I don't think he wanted to run a company day to day. So, you know, Emma was a big part of the company. He turned over operations to her. Her plan was originally to relocate to Macedonia, focus on the European market. Jose was traveling on the road with E.P. Carrillo anyway. So that was the plan. And he had all sorts of immigration problems in Macedonia for a while.
Right.
So the company really came to a halt. Now, right around that 2016 time was when FDA rules came in. So they kind of did a soft launch of this Freya 12 right before FDA, but they really didn't push it or market it until 2018 when Emma's immigration problems finally went away and they were able to fix that. So they were kind of, like I said, the brand, the company was kind of almost in a holding pattern for a while till they can straighten that all out. Now they had it straightened out, and Emma, I know, had some health problems earlier in the year, and now and then COVID happens. So it seems like she's had a lot of bad luck here, unfortunately.
No, okay. Well, no, it's a great cigar. Because like I said, I had her on the show when the original came out. She came on. So that was the last time I had the cigar.
Yeah,
Bear
and I had her on special edition back in November. And we smoked these. These are from the same batch.
All right.
Cool. But yeah, it's like I said, Emma's definitely, like I said, this is a, you know, we're doing women in music. We're doing women in cigars. Emma's on that list is what, you know, and I'll tell you.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, and I have to say quick, one more thing about the cigar and then we can get into other stuff. Like myself, I'm a big San Andreas kind of, you know, more really dark cigar kind of person. This is a very good sort of change of pace coupe, I think, for me. Like, I'm really enjoying it. I really like this sort of change of pace to more subtle flavors as opposed to really big, in-your-face kind of, you know.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's not going to get aggressive either at any point, which I think you'll appreciate what this cigar brings to the table. Bear and I smoked it blind on the air for the first time, and we liked it. So I reviewed the Devlin. I think the Churchill's a little better right now, just because this is the size it was blend for, the Brisingham. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like I said, it's definitely a cigar that I would recommend.
All right. Well, we'll check back in now. Unfortunately, Coop, much like when COVID first started, we have a number of deaths in the music industry that we want to touch on and honor.
Yeah, we had none in the last episode, but no. That's because it was only a week and 3 weeks, and there's been some surprises, that's for sure.
Yeah, now I think two of these, we'll start off with Charlie Daniels. I think Charlie Daniels, or the Charlie Daniels band, died. Oh, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week or so ago.
I want to say around the 4th of July, around that point, yeah.
I think people mostly know him from the song Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yep.
Probably his most popular song. But you have a story. You have a story about Charlie Coop.
Yeah. You've heard me talk about my dad and my grandfather in the days of their limousine company, and that they were contracted by CBS Records to drive. My dad had the opportunity to drive Charlie Daniels multiple times when Charlie was in New York. I got familiar with Charlie. You know, when my dad drove someone, he liked it. We heard the music, you know. So I got to hear a lot of Charlie. I never met Charlie. I never got a chance to meet him. But, you know, my dad spoke very good of him as a person. I know that was one of his, you know, he always welcome the opportunity to drive Charlie. My dad never was like a fanboy by any means.
Yeah.
He just, but he would come back and say, you know, when someone was really, you know, when you're a driver, sometimes you're treated like shit, right? That wasn't the case with, like, you know, I know when Michael Jackson treated my dad very well. And Charlie Daniels treated my dad extremely well. So, you know, it's one of those, like I said, I heard a lot. I got to hear a little more of Charlie Daniels than the Devil Went Down to Georgia, just because we heard the music there. And he might have been the greatest one-hit wonder of all time.
Yeah, mainstream anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you go into the Coyote Ugly bars, that's the dance they do in the Coyote Ugly movie and everything. So, but it's a great song. We lost one of the good guys.
And speaking of losing another one of the good guys, it was certainly had an immeasurable impact on music. That's Ennio Morricone. Passed away. Now he was 91.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a total surprise, unlike someone you'll talk about, Will. But people know a lot of his music. It's sort of in the same breath. People mention him with like Hans Zimmer, John Williams. This like.
Right.
Iconic movie composer. Did about 400 movies I saw, like 400 movie scores. I guess what he's really well known for are those Westerns, the Sergio Leone sort of Westerns around The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly he did. He did that sort of series. Really well known for that, as well as the Mission soundtrack. So my wife and I were talking, actually.
The Mission soundtrack from the 80s, right? That movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
What a great movie that is, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, that soundtrack. I was talking to my wife about it, and like when we were in high school, college, everybody had that soundtrack, but probably only 10% of the people saw the
movie. The movie was incredible, and I agree, it was a great I forgot he had done a lot of that.
He did that, and that was a big one. Now, you'd think, 400 movies, he must have tons of Oscars. Well, really, he was nominated for a lot, but the only one he won was for The Hateful Eight.
That was a surprise.
And Tarantino was a big fan of his, and he did The Hateful Eight, and that won. He was nominated for The Mission and nominated for others, but the one that won was Hateful Eight.
And yeah, if you watch The Mission and the way that music,
that music's incredible.
And the movie is, let's put it, it's one of those, how can I put it? It's not an action-packed movie by any means. De Niro and Jeremy Irons are in that movie, and it's a movie about the Jesuit missionaries in South America. And the music is powerful in that movie. I mean, you're right. There's no question. That's a great soundtrack.
You know what that music would go good with? This cigar.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that soundtrack in my head.
Yep.
And then I'll leave this last one for you, Will, because you know a lot more about this actress than I do. But this was a very big surprise.
Yeah. So
what happened here?
So I gotta put on a little bit of a confession hat here. Glee. Okay. I've watched Glee. Okay.
Huge show. Huge.
Listen, my daughter was like freshman in college. You come home and put it on. You can't help but not watch it. Right. Show was huge. Most of the episodes, I thought the show itself was not great. The music was if the covers fell into two categories, the crappy covers and the good covers. Right. But Naya Rivera, who was played one of the, she played Santana, character Santana on Glee, died tragically. I mean, 33 years old. It was she drowned in a lake. She was with her son on a boat. Apparently, the story is coming out. It sounds like she was able to save the son, but not able to save herself. There were very strong currents in that lake in California. It's a horrible. It's the ultimate tragedy. You just feel for that kid right now and her family. When I hear something like that, it's very sad. But I'll say this, on the episodes of Glee that I've seen, she was the MVP. She had the best. In fact, for this episode tonight, I was almost tempted before this happened because I'm going to talk about Valerie, the song, a little later. And she performed that on Glee, and I was going to kind of tie her into this. I didn't want to tie her in this way, but she was a legitimate singer, Naya Rivera. When she had a stage presence, her vocals were not those artificial vocals that a lot of the other characters, I don't know. The other vocals to me were just, okay, they could carry a tune and do a nice cover. They could dance. But Naya just had, she had a great range with her vocals. She covered Valerie, which is the song made famous by Amy Winehouse. She did a cover of Gloria with Adam Lambert, a duet with Adam Lambert, and it's a great cover. I think she would have had a great recording career if she wanted to do that. She didn't really pursue that. So 33 years old, we lost, like I said, we lost a mother, and you pray for that kid. Everything's gonna be okay with his family.
Yeah, that's rough. And yeah. I mean, Glee is a show. It was sort of in that vein. It's kind of riding the crest, which is still sort of it. It kind of is still popular today. That sort of Disney kind of like High School Musical sort of structure. Lots of great musicians have come out of that show. I mean, they've had a lot of heartbreak as well with a number of.
There was another guy who died on that show.
That was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
He died, yeah. But Idina Menzel came out of that show. A lot of great musicians came out of that show.
Adam Lambert went and did that show. Gwyneth Paltrow did a few episodes there. She was very good. Gwyneth Paltrow covered Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time. And, and was great at it. Like I said, there's some of the music was very good. I thought it was a little too melodramatic, the show. If you're into a lot of social issues, though, the show was – it did tackle the social issues that many people face in high school. I think they did it – like I said, it wasn't maybe the show I would watch, but I can see how it appealed to people.
Well, I think, too, a show like that and with her, Idina Menzel – and others with Naya and others. I think you're going to see it like the when I was reading this and thinking of it, like the Mickey Mouse Club, how over the years you've had all these different musicians come out of the Mickey Mouse Club.
Right.
And be a really big inspiration for a lot of pop music, like Justin Timberlake. Even before that, like Annette Funicello and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
I think Glee might be the same. Like a lot of younger kids, they really got into your Glees, your high school musicals. And that's sort of like a cappella choir covering thing. I think a lot of people get inspired by that and go into pop music, much like with Mickey Mouse Club. So
yeah, I mean,
any music that's popular on TV that like her and others made popular is great for the music industry because it inspires people.
Look, you know, they went back. They paid homage to Grease. They paid homage to the Bee Gees. They did a lot of modern stuff too.
I just remember when that show was at its height and they would do a good cover and that cover would just explode. Like everybody would be talking about it.
No, they would. Like I said, some of the covers, right? But some of them were, you know, some of them really hit. Like they like I said, the one she did of Valerie, I put it right up there with Amy's. I mean, that's how good, she was really good at it. She did some live versions of that too.
All right. Well, and as with all of the people that have passed away, Coop and I have made the decision on the show to like, you know, give them a little pay homage to them in the beginning of the shows when it happens.
Yeah.
But near the end of the year, we're gonna have like a bigger show. We're gonna celebrate them a bit more.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think once we get closer to the year end and the wrap-up shows, I agree. I think we're going to do that and kind of see how they all fit in with the year. You know, like I said, it'll be it's to pay homage to them. Celebrate the life they had.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now, Coop, it's time for Women in Music.
Yeah, you know, I was hoping to get Seth on tonight. We didn't, but there's a couple of tidbits I'll throw in that he threw in the notes there. You know what, Dave, you've always been, how can I put it? You've always kind of advocated for the female musicians going back to the jukebox days.
That's right.
Yeah. You have, you know, Seth is a feminist as well. Right. I don't have a better word. Right. But Seth too, you know, he has a lot of things, but yeah, you know, sometimes I lose sight of that there's some really good female musicians, to be honest. And not that I ignore them, but sometimes I just get caught up in my zone. And then when you suggest to do this show, I'm like, this is a great idea.
Oh, yeah. Now, yeah, feminist is a great word, Will. Throw it around, man.
Man, I feel like a woman.
The thing about it is, I think, and we'll get to it with Dolly Parton.
Oh, yeah.
But I think part of that in the industry, it's sort of when women were in the industry, they're always either like with Dolly, they were like partnered up with a man, or they were. So it's a very male dominated industry. A lot of, I mean, it's changing now, but I would say that could be why that is just, and then record play and radio play and all that, as well. But there's excellent women in music that talk about a variety of issues. And so what we did is we had sort of our eight foundational people.
Right.
And then we went with some modern ones to sort of look at.
Yeah. I think I had a couple that were like, I wasn't sure which one to put them on. So I just basically put the newest ones on the modern list. But I think I have, I think I went foundational with mine.
Yeah. I mean, the modern ones. Yeah. I mean, it's very subjective what's modern.
Yeah.
Whatever. No, but I think the best thing would be if we just go, like, I say one, then you say one. And
yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, I went with six, and then I have two from Seth. I'll kind of do his, you know, honorable mentions as to find out.
Yeah. So the first one I'll go with is Aretha Franklin. For me, like, you know, a key figure in both Motown and gospel. She sort of became more socially active as time went on. And I think the reason for that is a lot of women, when they first get in the industry, they feel very, they feel difficult to find their voice because it's such a male dominated industry. They're just like, sure, I'll do what the producer says and I'll make my record and whatever. But as time went on and she got more confident and more, I guess, more in the industry, she started to have more social activism, feminist themes in her songs. And it's just incredible voice. I mean, one of the best voices in music history.
Oh, yeah.
Just amazing. And the song I chose that sort of summed up everything that's phenomenal about Aretha Franklin is Respect. The song Respect, it has her gospel side, great feminist message, amazing voice, highlights the best of Motown and gospel. So I think it's sort of is all in that one song. So she's my first foundational person.
Yeah, you know, and even later Aretha's 80s work, you know, Freeway Love, the Pink Cadillac, it's the theme of Cigar Coupe. So, I mean, that's big. You know, she did Who's Zoomin' Who. I love the duet she did with George Michael as well.
Yep.
She really carried it over for a multi-decade career. I mean, you know, she was still pretty musically active right up until a year or two ago, I believe, doing, you know, not producing albums anymore, but performing and beloved. And, you know, in this time of, you know, unfortunately, with the problems we're seeing in society today, racialized, she's a breath of fresh. I think she brought a lot of people together. I mean, I don't think anyone ever. I always just associated Aretha Franklin as an artist. That's how I looked at it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the foundational members that both Will and I will talk about were sort of not just, you know, excellent musicians, but really key when we spoke a couple weeks ago about, like, civil rights issues and songs. We're really key members in that movement in bringing those social issues out. So,
yeah,
key in a lot of ways. So I'll let you, Will, go to your first one, because I know this is a love of yours.
Yeah, and I haven't talked about her much on the show, and you're going to start hearing more of me because of I haven't mentioned – I don't have a Dolly thing with Dave and everything, but if I had to say – if you said, Will, write down your number one female artist of all time, this is her. It's Diana Ross. I am a huge fan of Diana Ross. Going back to her time in the Supremes, and then becoming a solo artist in the 70s. And, you know, a lot of times you mentioned, like, foundational, right? Diana kind of didn't start off as a sideshow for a male singer. Neither did Aretha. I don't want to say Aretha did either. She did.
No.
But so Diana, you know, three-woman group, the Supremes. And then, you know, like anything, Diana became the star of the group, and I think it eventually – it broke the Supremes up, right? And Diana went on to have an incredible career going into the 70s and then reinvented herself in the 80s, okay? So I would say she was doing Motown in the 60s and the 70s. The 80s comes along. She starts working with Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards in the early 80s. The mid-80s, she's working with the Bee Gees, okay? So she changed – when she left Motown, that's when some of those changes happened. There's just – and I picked one song from each of those eras, right? So I picked a song from the 60s, In and Out of Love. It's not one of the more popular Supreme songs, but it's kind of a softer song. It almost seems like a song I'd hear on a tropical island. You know, if I was having a tropical island wedding, I think I'd play that song, In and Out of Love. It's just Diana's vocals on it. It's a place we want to hear the range of her vocals, right? That's a great one. In the 70s, I picked Touch Me in the Morning, the theme from Mahogany, the movie she did with Billy Dee Williams. You know, that is just, again, you want to just some powerful vocals in there. If you haven't seen the movie with Billy Dee Williams, you got to see it. It's a great movie. I became a Billy Dee fan before he did Star Wars. And then in the 80s, she starts working with Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards of Chic, and they produce an album for her. And one of the songs has just become her song. This is what she'll open every concert with, I'm Coming Out.
Yeah.
And
that's a great song.
It's a theme of the lesbian gay movement. So I think a lot of people think that was written for that. I'm not sure about that, but it's a great song. And when you see her do it live, she comes out and that's what she's doing. She comes out and, you know, Diana just kicks off a concert like that every time. And she just, to me, she's in her 70s and I still think she looks great and sings great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was thinking too as you were speaking and as I was looking at this list the other day, much like Aretha, it's very rare to have an artist be sort of the key member in different genres. Like for her to be key in both Motown and then later in disco.
Yeah.
It's very rare to have an artist sort of at the forefront of like multiple genres of music. Yeah.
Dave, she did a song. It was in 84 called Swept Away. And it was one of those dance floor disco songs. And it just had it was kind of just at the end of the disco era when it came out. But that song was, every nightclub was playing that song on the dance floor with it. And that was hard doing it. It was called Swept Away. Yeah. Well, you're right. She kind of was able to, and then, you know, when the 90s came, I don't think she tried to reinvent herself again. She just went with her strengths at that point.
Oh, good. No, good pick. Love this. I love the Supremes. I have to say, Diana Ross, I'm way more into the Supremes than her solo stuff, but the Supremes.
Oh, I mean, we're going to probably do a show down the road around her and we could talk a lot more about that debate. But yeah, the Supremes, you know, they had hit. They were, I mean, you can make an argument they may have been the third or fourth biggest band of the 60s. You can
make
that, I mean, because the Supremes dominated the 60s for a long time. I mean, maybe you put the Stones and the Beatles ahead of her. I'll get that. Led Zeppelin came along later.
But not just that, though, but I think that sort of Supreme sound is sort of what you typically think of when you think Motown. It's like you think of that sound, really. So
yeah, iconic. you really do. You know, I agree. I mean, there's some such great musicians came out of Motown in that era.
Now, this next foundational singer, this goes out to listener Tracy Irvin, who messaged me that she really likes jazz because she liked our show where we spoke about the Black Lives Matter stuff and did some
stuff.
Thank
you, Tracy.
On that.
Yep.
She likes jazz, and one of the we got a couple jazz people on here, Tracy, so you'll be excited.
Yep.
One of them is Nina Simone. So that's my other foundational singer. So really took jazz, I guess, vocal jazz, and brought it into more social justice issues, a lot of stuff around what themes of Black Lives Matter is exploring now. With Nina Simone, you have a lot of other things as well. So you have some mental health issues, you have abusive relationships. She like moved to Africa for a while. Like there's documentaries on here that are incredible. But I think what's amazing with the music is how bold she was and how, I guess, she was not afraid to make statements in her music. And the song I chose for that is a song called Mississippi Goddamn. It's a song she did. And it was about sort of like lynchings and stuff in Mississippi at the time. But in later interviews, she said that she thinks that song harmed her career because after that song was released, there were a lot of boycotts of her music, which is going to be a theme that's going to happen with a lot of women musicians that we talk about.
Oh, no question about it.
Is that there's a lot of boycotting of their music because of different themes they bring up. With hers being around women's voices being silenced and black voices being silenced, which at the time was not really what radio stations wanted to play. You can even hear, I think Kanye West, there's another person on here that we'll talk about, but she did a cover of a song called Strange Fruit, and which we'll talk about later. But that was even sampled in a Kanye West song. So a lot of her music is still really prevalent and important today. Nina Simone, foundational person, love her voice, love her music. And Mississippi Goddamn was a song that sort of like pulls all that together.
Yeah, I mean, again, Nina Simone's died, I want to say, about 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
She's been gone a long time. And, you know, I think some of the people may are into the newer music. If you're following, like, Dave's playlist, right, you know, this is an artist that you should really pay attention to who made her mark socially. I would agree.
And she did covers of, like, Bob Dylan songs and stuff, so... Her sort of range is quite big, so you should check her out. If you haven't listened to her yet, you should check her out.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Did she get in the Hall of Fame?
I believe so. I'd have to check.
I'd have to check that, too. I should have checked that before the show, yeah. She's in the North Carolina Music Hall of Fame, I can tell you that. She should be absolutely in the Hall of Fame.
I think so.
Yeah.
Like I said, though, I mean, a lot of the stuff outside of music is amazing. Her life is incredible. So watch a documentary if you haven't.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you do.
I'll find that out, Will, and you can
I don't think she's in.
No, well, it says here 2018.
But was she nominated? She did get inducted, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did get inducted. Well deserved. Absolutely.
2018. I mean, come on, Rock.
Way too long. Way too long.
You do it better earlier than that.
Yeah, way too long.
Come on.
Yep.
Sorry, go ahead. You're next up, Will.
All right. There's just three words. Queen of Disco, Donna Summer.
Yeah.
All right. You know, Donna Summer, there was her height was only about an 8-year period from like 75 to like 83. But wow, I mean, it's hard to find another female artist who was as dominant as she was during that time. She had a voice. She had a sexuality to her. And it just kind of played into that whole late 70s and the whole disco era. And she was very, very talented. She wasn't a songwriter by any means, right? But the right people seem to kind of know, like, to bring her in as a vocalist. You know, Giorgio Moroder with I Feel Love. I mean, Giorgio Moroder, you talk about Italian composers. Moroder was one of the big ones back then, right? And I Feel Love, there's an 18-minute version of that song out there somewhere.
True.
Right? Just a fantastic she got a role in a movie called Thank God It's Friday. And there was a song in that movie, I didn't put this on the list, that was in that movie, that was the key part of that movie.
Right.
And ended up winning the Oscar for best Ooh. Original song. It was called Last Dance. One of the characters in Thank God It's Friday wrote that song, produced that song. It was Paul Jabara. And so, yeah, Last Dance became her song. I mean, that became Donna's song, you think about it. The Last Dance. For many, many years, nightclubs would close. Still, even today, like, weddings sometimes close with that song. So she just had a beautiful, soulful voice. MacArthur Park. She did a cover of MacArthur Park. It's called the MacArthur Park Suite. So it's like it's a medley of certain songs in there. It's MacArthur Park, but the one probably people may know is Heaven Knows is in there. Again, if you wanted, they used to play these songs at the disco all the time, that MacArthur Park Suite. So a really, really good one. And then kind of, you know, as he kind of turned the corner into the 80s, I think she started to adapt a little more. She started doing a little more pop type music. Bad Girls had much more of a rock edge to it. You know, and that was kind of, then she, you know, she works hard for the money. It was like around 83. Mm. Then she just kind of disappeared for a while. She had one more hit, and this time it's for real in 89. But never shed. I don't think she was caught up necessarily in the backlash of disco. I think there was just other things going on with her at that point.
Right.
More or less. I think she was able to adapt. I guess in 83, when she did, she worked hard for the money, I think she proved she can kind of move away from that disco. Same with Bad Girls. One of my favorites. I could probably do a whole show on Donna Summer.
Whoa. Well, hey. No, I love it. I love a bit of Donna
Summer.
If
we ever do a disco show, yeah, I know she'll be on it. But, yeah, I could do a whole Donna Summer show.
And I think, Coop, you were sort of talking about, which is a great point, that backlash to disco. I think that's why a lot of, when we're talking women in music, especially women that were big in the disco genre, a lot of them get underrepresented or under-celebrated. It's because of that backlash, I think.
There was. I mean, there was a woman named French Jolie. She's, Donna Summer's passed away, by the way. Mm. French Jolie was like, I think everyone thought she was going to be that next big disco sound. And then she disappeared. I mean, it kind of got caught up in that backlash, too.
Mm. This is not disco, my next one, but it's a woman who was like a comet, just like came out blazing and then gone too soon. And that's Janis Joplin. So Janis Joplin, who I wrote a whole paper on in college, is took on head on a male dominated genre, especially in rock and roll, and especially like your sort of hard rock, really. Blues rock. And the way it happened is she was at a show and got like hammered and then went up on stage and just started singing. And they're like, hey, you're pretty good. And she got, you know, and she got her show. So she got her stuff. So I think Janis Joplin's mostly known for, you know, the flamboyant outfits, kind of big into the peace, love sort of Woodstock sort of thing. And then was just ultra rock and roll, like hanging out with Jimi Hendrix and like, you know, Morrison, and just like ultra rock and roll. There's a story on one of the podcasts where Morrison was coming on stage during a Hendrix show and he was drunk and he was ruining it. And Janis Joplin got upset because he wanted to hear Jimi Hendrix. So she went on stage and like hit him with a bottle and like dragged him off the stage. So that's Janis Joplin.
Yeah.
But she's an icon. Like, I mean, her music is still played a lot in movies and stuff now. Like I said, died far too soon. But her music still endures, and her sort of her image still endures. The song I chose, because there's so many iconic songs, a lot of her discography has been picked over, so it's hard to find a song that really hasn't been talked to death, really. But I picked the opening track off of her record, Pearl, which is like the iconic record, is Pearl, especially with the cover with her on it. Like, that's the iconic record. So I chose the first track off of that, which is Move Over. That's my Joplin song.
You know, and you know, that's the album with me and Bobby McGee on there as well. What a short career, though, she had, but the impact in a short career.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he only released two albums, like two solo albums, I'll say. But what a like, short career, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it wasn't long, but I mean, but the impact she had, and I think it was just such a strong voice taking on such a male-dominated genre, like a highly patriarchal genre, rock and roll. I mean, it's still today, really, when you think of rock as your, like, guitar-based rock, it's very male-dominated. She took it on and, like, you know, got in there and made it happen. So good on you, Janis.
There was a lot of controversy how she died, too, if it was drugs or not, to this day. I mean, it's back of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to be honest, Coop, when you hear stories about rock musicians around that time, I'm surprised they all didn't die.
Yeah, like, that's true.
It's unbelievable.
It was the era there.
But I'll it's interesting looking at the next two, cuz your one and Janis Joplin, there's some good sort of interesting comparisons there.
Yeah, I mean, so this one was one of them. I think it's still foundational, even though it's the 90s. And she's been around a long time, and she's had a big impact for women in music. And that's Alanis Morissette. And she really broke through in 95. She's from Canada. So, thank you, Surgeon. thank you to our surgeon. She comes down from Canada. She hooks up with in a business way, with someone by the name of Glenn Ballard, who was a producer and co-songwriter of ours, and they produced this album called Jagged Little Pill. Okay.
Ooh.
It's the first song off that album that that everyone, you ought to know. It's this. And it was groundbreaking for a female artist. Anger, a lot of anger on that album. There was explicit lyrics on that album. This was an edgy song. And the album was just a pure masterpiece. I mean, the song I actually picked from her was Ironic, right? And it basically is a song written about irony, right? But that whole album changed female musicians, how you looked at a female musician, because no one had ever kind of done something like this, right? And like I said, it's one of the biggest selling albums of all time, I think. I think it's second by a female artist behind Shania Twain.
It's a great record.
It's a great record. I think it won a Grammy. I forget if it did or not. It should have if it didn't. And Alanis didn't continue on that path. Actually, she softened up on some of her other albums, but never lost her. I think her. Like I said, she's a songwriter. She can produce. She's actually pretty. I think she's actually, like, people don't think of her as a hottie, but you know, I think she's pretty. She's now, I think she's gotten on the motherhood track the last few years, so she's cut back her schedule a bit. I think we're looking I think there's her name's going to come in the Hall of Fame discussion at some point, if it should already.
She is back on the scene, Coop, because she's touring this record.
But it got postponed, right? Yeah.
Yep. A lot of COVID stuff postponed. She's supposed to come out to Australia. She also guest stars on a Halsey song on Halsey's new record that came out last year.
The Alanis. So what's that?
She's out and about. I just want to put in perspective what you're saying, Will, because it's an excellent point, sort of how different her music was at the time. Because we look back on it, and we're like, oh, that was kind of alternative rock was everywhere. But I'm just going to say some of the top 10 songs that were out in 95 when this album released.
Okay.
So if you think of her record, and it came out at a time where, like, Kiss from a Rose was top 10.
Seal, yeah.
Seal. We had TLC. Mariah Carey, you know, Blues Traveler. If it's coming out at that time, it was very different.
Kim Blossoms, yeah.
From a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit more groundbreaking than people give it credit for. But it's a great record, great pick.
I want to mention something else. This album, when it came out, didn't appeal to me at first, right? Because it was like, who is this woman and why is she so angry, right? And as she started getting more airplay, as they started playing more of the singles off that album, like, you ought to know, I'm like, who is she to come out with a song like this, right? And then when you started to hear some of the other songs off that album, you realize that that was her year. My 95 was Alanis's year. And now you saw some, by the time like 3 or 4 singles came off that album, like, we're looking at someone very special who absolutely, I said, is on a path to the Hall of Fame. And some of her other albums don't have the name recognition, but there's some great, the music is great off those albums. And it doesn't get the airplay anymore, and it's a shame.
I think, too, which sort of leads into my next one, a lot of women, when they have these breakthrough albums, are really giving voice to a lot of, you know, social patriarchy and things that, you know, they've experienced. So I think one of the other key things about these records, when we're looking at women in music, is they're giving voice to a population that's largely, you know, doesn't have a lot of voice in society. And so these records really bring it out, which we'll be touching on with my next one, Dolly.
Took you four to get to Dolly, though.
I want to keep people guessing, Will. They would assume it would be number one.
Right. Yeah, here we go.
But Dolly, so Dolly kind of, you know, much like other women, you're sensing some themes here, taking on a highly patriarchal, male-dominated genre in country music. Singer-songwriter, like you were saying, Will, like with Alanis and others, singer-songwriter. Yep. One of the first singer-songwriters, like very early on. But it was what she wrote about. So she wrote her songs about divorce, having children out of wedlock, domestic violence, and really highlighting marginalized women's voices. Which she's done throughout her music. But she also kind of broke three. Originally, she came into music with Porter Wagoner, because country music, if you're a female singer, well, then, of course, you have to have, like, the male frontman that you just, like, sing with. And for her, it was Porter Wagoner. Like, if you look back, a lot of excellent female country singers were linked up with men, country music men, and they were sort of seen as, like, just this, like, you know, object of the man, basically.
Yep.
And then she's like, well, I'm a bit too big for you, Porter. I'm out. Because at this time, she's recording Jolene and stuff, and she's like, nah, I'm gone.
Right.
So even with Porter Wagoner, she was singing songs that had a very sort of, feminist vibe to them. And, like, songs I'm thinking of are Dumb Blonde, which is a song about, like, oh, you think I'm a dumb blonde, you know, that's your fault because I'm smart and I'm going to take advantage of that and, like, get one over on you sort of thing, which is a great, great song. And that was during the Porter Wagoner days. But the song I really like is a song that, once again, boycott. Like, radio stations refused to play this song. And it's called You're Gonna Be Sorry. And it's sort of in the vein of Kitty Wells, who did It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels.
Right.
And there's a country trope around men getting done bad by their woman sort of thing. And it's a country trope for songs like Through Eternity. And she kind of turns it on its head. And she's like, well, let's look at the other side of that. And this is a song about a woman who's got a guy that doesn't respect her. And, like, you hear, so basically what she's saying is, like, you hear all these country songs about the man done bad. Well, maybe it's because he's terrible and he deserves to get kicked to the curb.
Yeah.
And that's what this song is. It sort of takes that structure and turns it around, which is what Kitty Wells does. Is she's like, well, what if, you know, these people singing these songs are actually, like, dirtbags and they deserve to get kicked out. So it's very interesting how she does that. She does that with a lot of songs, and it's just amazing. And I think it's why her podcast did so well this last year or so, why she's still very popular, is because she takes these social issues around marginalized people and, like, turns it around in songs. So, yeah, You're Gonna Be Sorry. Great song.
Yeah, no, that's a good, you know, good pick. And, you know, there's so much, like you said, there was so much more to Dolly the songwriter. You know, and Dolly, look, you can give Dolly a song like the Bee Gees gave her Kenny Rogers' Islands in the Stream, and they can go off on another. But Dolly had that other side to her too. That, you know, a lot of people they forget about that part of Dolly.
Yeah, and I think
real force in Nashville. Yeah,
I think the thing about it, which is sort of a theme with all the women we're talking about, is that Dolly, like, was very determined in her message. Like, she didn't care. Yeah. Like, she's like, I know who I am. I know what my music is. I don't care. And so, which is sort of a theme with a lot of the women that we're talking about is sort of a very sort of trailblazer, pioneer kind of spirit in them that's like, no, this story has to be told, and I don't care what people say.
Yeah.
Which goes to your next one, Will, which is this your one. This is a very Janis Joplin-like pick from you. And I just listened to this her record the other day.
Yeah. This one is Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
You know, again, you look at women in rock, okay? When, you know, so she was, in the, you know, Stevie Nicks, everyone knows her from her time in Fleetwood Mac. She came in with Lindsey Buckingham. She was part of a duet called Buckingham and Nicks. They were brought in by Fleetwood Mac to be a part of the band. And Lindsey and Stevie really became, they really put their footprint on that band pretty quickly. You know, they were the outsiders that came in, okay? And they kind of became the front of that band in different ways, you know? I think Lindsey had more of the guitar work, the songwriting, and the best background vocalist in the world, but Stevie was the front woman. Her and Christy McVie, they were the front women of that band. And Stevie went from, you know, she became very pretty when she came in. I think she's still very pretty, but she became not just known for her looks, she became known for her vocals, her musical talent. She struck out on her own. And, you know, did some Edge of 17, Leather and Lace with Don Henley, but Stand Back to me, That's Stevie's song. And Fleetwood Mac plays that song today now. I mean, that's the only of her solo work that they play, but that's all Stevie. That raspy voice she's got. But, you know, you can hear there's a harmonious voice in some of her work, too. You know, Silver Springs is a great example of that.
Yep.
Like I said, she's just... I mean, like I said, she became the front. She was the front person for Fleetwood Mac. Rumor is one of the most successful albums of all time.
Oh yeah.
Songwriting, she's got it all. Great artist. What can I say more?
Oh, Coop. I just listened to Belladonna, which is her solo record.
Oh my goodness, Belladonna. I love that song too.
Oh, I listened to it, and looking at the record jacket. I'm like, oh, I recognize that song. Oh, yeah, I like that song. I'll put it on. And then, like, every song, I'm like, oh, I love this song. Like,
yeah.
You forget, like, how many songs you like. That's a great record. And Stevie Nicks is amazing. The cool thing about, to get to Will's story, this is on another podcast called Rivals that we talked about before. But they have a Fleetwood Mac one. So
I haven't heard that one yet, by the way, yeah.
Okay, this is a spoiler alert. So Buckingham and Nicks came in to Fleetwood Mac. Right.
Yep.
And originally, they sort of wanted Buckingham was the more established musician.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And if you listen to it, in my opinion, Buckingham, if he isn't, you know, actively doing a lot of DV in the relationship, he's at least not a very respectful boyfriend, let's say.
Yeah.
And so they had a big falling out, and eventually, because Buckingham really couldn't take that Stevie Nicks was successful, really.
Oh, because I said she became the star of that band, yeah.
Yeah, and there was Stevie Nicks went to the band, and she's like, listen, either he's gone or I'm gone. And they called up, and his manager, Buckingham's manager, called him up and told him that. And Buckingham's like, oh, okay, you know, that's too bad, you know, blah, 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 thinking that they got rid of Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, this is recently. This is recently, by the way. This went on for many years, but this is recently.
So he was sitting around for a couple of days, and he calls his manager, and he's like, hey, is the band rehearsing or anything? Like, I haven't gotten a call. And he said, oh, no, they fired you.
Yeah.
So he thought they fired her, and they had to call him back and be like, no, we got rid of you.
This tension with Buckingham and Nicks went on for a long time, and it was through the Rumors album.
Still is.
It went through the Rumors album. There was a point where Lindsey Buckingham did leave the band and came back, but the tension apparently never went away. And it, like I said, it just and Lindsey has a reputation for being very difficult. He's a perfectionist, God. And that's always been the knock on. He's a great musician, but yeah, it got to a point where, you know, they were not going to lose Stevie.
Yeah, well, she was the voice of the band. She was the voice, like you said, by Rumors. She was
Right. I mean, Goldust Woman. I mean, yeah. And again, like a female who just became the face of a band, she became it.
Excellent, excellent, excellent pick, Will. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I'm glad that she made it on there.
Yeah. Yep. That, in fact, I was talking to Joe Groh from Drew Estate last night. We were just doing a Joe's a good friend of mine from Drew Estate. He's the marketing manager, and he knew about the show. He goes, you have Stevie Nicks on that, do you? I said, how'd you guess? He goes, yeah, I'd be surprised if he didn't. I said, yeah, Stevie's on my list.
Belladonna, man.
Yep.
Check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this foundational person is so foundational, she's foundational to the foundational people.
Right.
A lot of the women, probably all of them, even Dolly Parton in a lot of ways, wouldn't even be on this list without her, and that's Billie Holiday. And this goes out to Tracy as well, another jazz link for you, Tracy. She had a brutal life of abuse and just like DV, drug abuse, like a bunch of stuff. But she had that jazzy blues voice that really resonated, and she took on a lot of social issues at a time that, you know, no one was doing that. And just her strength as a female vocalist really, I think, paved the way for a lot of these artists that we're talking about. And especially when you're looking at Aretha and Nina Simone. Nina Simone covered some of her songs. And the song I chose for Billie is Strange Fruit. And I mentioned it before. It's about lynchings, where she's talking about the strange fruit is actually, you know, black people that were hanging from trees during this lynching. And it's been covered. It's iconic. It's been covered by so many artists. Nina Simone, like I said, Kanye West sampled the song in one of his songs. It's an iconic social justice song that really laid the groundwork for a lot of people coming forward. So got to pay respect to Billie Holiday, who I love, and got to use the song that has a lot of resonance still today, and that's Strange Fruit.
Wow, that's a good pick. I mean, Billie Holiday, you mentioned foundational foundations, yeah. And like I said, you know, there's so much that, you're right, she had that tough life as well. And Billie Holiday is revered, which is really good, but think about, you're right, laying that groundwork for Aretha and Nina Simone, for sure.
A lot of Billie Holiday, she's not on my list, but I'll mention her anyway because it's a sneaky way to get someone else on my list. But it reminds me a lot, Coop, like Ike and Tina Turner, like that sort of, you know, kind of that abusive relationship, and Tina Turner still putting out this really connecting music. Remind me a bit of that.
Yeah.
Billie Holiday did sort of that rough... their rough life, but somehow managed to get out such meaningful music.
Yeah, very, very true as far as that goes. A little connection here. To Diana.
Yeah.
And we mentioned, I mentioned, you know, Mahogany with Diana Ross and Billy Dee Williams. Don't forget Lady Sings the Blues.
Mm.
And don't forget who played Billie Holiday.
Mm.
Diana. Yeah.
Now, there's the next one, Will, that I'm glad you put on as well.
Yeah.
This person is near and dear to my heart.
Again, I put her on here because when you look at a band, okay, the band Blondie, okay, wasn't Debbie Harry, okay? Debbie Harry was the lead singer of it. I remember people used to think that Blondie was the nickname for Debbie Harry, which it was, but she was the front woman for this band. In the late 70s really started to catch on, particularly the new wave started to grow. And Debbie Harry was the face of that. I mean, when you thought Blondie, you thought Debbie Harry. She had a talented group of musicians. Her range of vocals were amazing, okay? That's the thing I think that she brought to the table. You could have her sing low notes. You could have her sing high notes. And it was just brilliant the way she worked with that band. You know, the song I always look at is Heart of Glass, which in my opinion, production-wise, if you ever want to look at how a song is produced and built in the studio, that song was built on layers after layers. She recorded very, very many, many vocal tracks, right? That they kind of all integrated in there. And yet when you heard her sing that song live, she just performed it like it was all together there. And then, you know, in the 90s, Blondie had a comeback, and she did that song Maria, which I love that song, right? That's another one. And Debbie Harry still performs today, and she's she's an iconic figure for female musicians, female vocalists, female leaders of a band. And I will contend she is the, you could speak, they could say about, you know, you could say whatever you want. She was the leader of that band.
She was sort of the modern Stevie Nicks, wasn't she, really?
She was.
I mean, a lot of Stevie Nicks, yeah.
Yeah, she came along after Stevie Nicks. You know, she, like I said, particularly, like, they kind of both, you know, had their, Stevie's solo success came in the early 80s, actually.
Yeah.
So that Stevie came around 98-1. Blondie had already had it. But, yeah, you kind of look at the two blondes there.
I guess it's hard to see, like, there, I don't think, like, Deborah Harry, like, she gets so, I think Stevie Nicks is a definite influence for her. I mean, whether she said that or not,
I was gonna say that, yeah, I think she was a definite influence, and I think there wouldn't have been a Stevie Nicks solo career if it wasn't for what Debbie did with Blondie either, if I had to put it like that. So, yeah, she paved the way for her and Blondie. And then Blondie paved the way, I think, for Stevie Nicks in the 80s. And a Hall of Famer, by the way. They're in the Hall of Fame, Blondie.
A song that she did that I always love is Call Me. I love that song.
I was going to mention it. Wow, yeah. Da-da, yeah, that's just that, you know, again, a little harder edge in that song. You know, don't forget Rapture. Don't forget Debbie Harry doing the rap in Rapture before there was rap.
Yeah.
So that show, and that was a complete, again, you want to talk about vocal ranges, pulling off a rap back then, that was groundbreaking what they were doing with Rapture.
The next person I finally saw her in concert a couple years ago, and it was amazing. And that's Patti Smith.
Yeah.
Queen of the New York punk scene.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to pick her, too.
Love Patti Smith. Yeah. So her iconic record is Horses. That's where she's on the cover with the black tie, like punk as. It's just phenomenal. Just she'll go on to inspire. I mean, she's done a lot of great stuff since then. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, Queen of New York punk scene, CBGBs. She's a big activist as well, and a lot of her music paved the way for what would become the Riot Girl movement in the 90s, where you have Bikini Kill and some other bands that were sort of female driven, like all women punk bands in that Riot Girl sort of grunge sub pop scene in the 90s. But the song I picked for Patti that I got to see live and tick off my bucket list was Gloria off of the song Horses, which is, I mean, it's the record itself. You hear the sounds of that record, you can hear in Annie Lennox to Nirvana to whatever, just the basic structure. And the Pixies, a lot of different bands have taken influence from Patti. But she says the line in the beginning, she says, "Jesus died for someone's sins, but not mine." And I think it's the best rock line ever written.
Yeah.
Like, you could write that line and never produce another song for the rest of your life, and you should go in the Hall of Fame just based on that line. It's incredible. Love Patti Smith. She's out here and she's 70.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's in her mid-70s, I think, by now.
She's got long braids, still playing guitar, just like trashing everything. It's like, she's just punk rock and just living it up. Yep. Loved it.
I think that's a great pick, and I think that's, again, you look at where what she did for punk rock, you know, the female vocalist in the punk rock scene. That's a great pick. That was a great pick.
And not just that, Will, like very New York as well.
Very New York. I think,
yeah.
Even like, I remember going into like Manhattan and Greenwich Village and, you know, seeing the posters up of her, you know. You know, and she's by that point she was in her late 30s and stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah.
They called her the punk poet laureate.
Well, that's she wrote a book too. I haven't read it. I gotta read it. But yeah, incredible.
And of course she teamed up with Bruce Springsteen on Because of the Night. They both wrote that song, yeah.
God, Patti Smith is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, Coop. You're gonna throw a couple of Seths in here. What do you got?
I have one. I have one more.
Wait, one more. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
This is my number six. Fiona Apple. I added this one late. That's probably why you don't have it. Yeah.
Great new record.
Well, she's 43 or 44. She's older than you think right now. So I put her as foundation. I didn't put her in the new.
That's right.
I put her in foundation, Dave, because the work she kind of did, you know, with the piano, it almost like she, from a female artist, right? She wasn't the first to incorporate classical musical elements into music, into rock. But from a female standpoint, she was like you didn't really see a lot of that, right? And she did that. She had a very much, if you watch her perform live, she had a very expressive personality on there. She was a hell of a songwriter. I mean, and, you know, for Hector, if I didn't pick Criminal, I mean, but what a song. I mean, Criminal's an absolute masterpiece. It won a Grammy. They should have thrown the Grammys out if it didn't win it. It's an absolute masterpiece of a song. And it's a, you know, it's kind of along the lines of that Alanis Morissette kind of boldness to it. And, you know, Fiona doesn't get the respect. I know Hector loves her, and I understand it. There's no problem. She's just but I put her in as foundational here. I kind of – it was close, but I said she's over 40. I'm going to put her in as foundational here or, you know, not the newer category is the best way to put it.
Oh, yeah. Great pick, Coop. I mean, you know, Hector loves you for that. But the other thing is that, like, she does – I mean, she has a lot of time in between records. But
yeah.
She doesn't put out a lot of dud records.
No,
like,
it's quality,
great,
yeah.
Records.
Yeah, it's
Yeah, like the last two, each time it's come out, it's been talked of as record of the year. Like her newer one, is being talked of as record of the year. The one before that, the title is like 75 words long, so I can't even remember it. But I mean, that was an incredible record. Like Hot Knife Through Butter, I think, is on that record, or Hot Knife maybe. But there's a lot of, I mean, she does some really good records. Excellent songwriter. Great pick, Coop.
I agree. I agree. You know, like I said, Hector kind of steered me on to I kind of went away from her for a while, and, you know, from getting and talking to Hector, got reacquainted with her.
Good stuff. I have Madonna because I just felt bad not having Madonna on here. Like,
you gotta have Madonna. Look, I have a lot of good things. I almost put Madonna, but you already had her, so I'm glad you did.
Like, you have to. I mean, when you talk about sexuality, feminism, power, like, she had all that. And, like, boycotting, another theme, like, when she put out songs that were, like, too, you know, too much or whatever. But a lot of the pop icons we're going to talk about, say, Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift, like, if you didn't have Madonna, they wouldn't be anywhere, really. So I had to put it on there. And the song I chose is Vogue, because I think it kind of puts her at her height and also embodies a lot of these sort of messages of power and feminism and what that means and in that song. So yeah, gotta have Madonna.
They at my wedding, okay, in 1990, all the
Madonna
women.
Madonna was there?
No, Madonna wasn't there, but they played they played Vogue, and all the women at the wedding were kind of dancing in a line with, kind of dancing. Like, they were in a line. I don't want to say they're dancing, but they were singing along with that. There's a I have video of that, which is really cool to see that. My work with Madonna, you know, is goes back Confessions on a Dance Floor in 2006. The disco era throwback she did. Masterpiece. Incredible concert to go along with that, too.
Best name for an album I've ever heard. Confessions on a Dance Floor is a phenomenal name for a record.
And here's what's great about it. You put that CD or album on, it's continuous. Every song leads into the other. It's got a feel of being back in a lot of sampling was done on that album. You know, he had the famous thing, he had to go back and get permission from ABBA, you know, to use the sample there, and they gave her permission. I heard they put her through the ringer a bit to get it.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, because they don't do that. They don't, and they don't do that. Benny and Bjorn are very protective of their music, so but they did it, and they were very. They talk about how professional she was seeking them out to do it, and they gave the permission. I'm sure they made a lot of money on it too. I'm sure they didn't do it for free, but yeah.
All right, what else you got, Coop?
All right, what I'll do is Seth gave a couple of picks. I just want to say who my other two would have been. I won't go too deep into them just for time, but the other two I had were going to pick were Sheila E.
Okay.
You know, came up from the Prince era, became a drummer in her own right, and eventually was touring with Ringo Starr. I think Sheila E's definitely a contributor, female percussionist. You know, we don't think of her. But she was, I think, of all the artists of that Prince Paisley Park, you can make an artist. She had a very successful career in her own right with that, was her own songwriter. And the other one just I threw in was Laura Branigan, who just had a beautiful voice. She was like a female crooner in a lot of ways. You know, she died. She passed away probably about 15 years ago. She's had a little bit of a resurgence in the States because when the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup, that was their theme song.
All right. Okay.
Yep. But let me mention the two that Seth had. He had two really good ones. He first mentioned Joni Mitchell.
Yes.
Joni Mitchell off River was the song he picked for her. I think that's a really good pick. I mean, Joni Mitchell
Joni Mitchell's amazing.
Joni Mitchell's, again, more the folky. If you were into that whole folky thing, I could see Seth, you know, on with the blanket, jamming to a little Joni Mitchell with the wife and the daughters. Yeah, I could see it.
Not just that; it's that like singer-songwriter sort of. No, excellent pick. Love Joni Mitchell.
Yep.
My daughter's named after Joni Mitchell.
I didn't. That's right. Yeah, I knew her name. I didn't think of that. Yes, Joni. Yeah, I know you mentioned her name. Yeah. The other one he picked was Annie Lennox. He mentioned the Medusa album, so I'll pick a song for Seth off that, No More I Love Yous. I'm a huge fan of Annie Lennox in her Eurythmics days. And I'm a big Dave Stewart fan, but you know, No More I Love Yous, this was a solo album she did. I just love that song. It's a powerful song. It showed how good a vocalist she is. I think she still doesn't get I don't think she gets the notoriety sometimes I'd like to see her see. You know, she did a song, she did The Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves, as well as a great song with Aretha.
I mean, you talk about a lot of the women we were talking about, sort of feminism, gender bending, those sorts of things. Annie Lennox, very much in the Patti Smith kind of mold. Just great. Great, yeah. Taking on all those gender issues and amazing musician.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember the song, the duet she did with the Aretha. It was actually the Eurythmics who did that one with Aretha. So they're doing it, but that whole feminism, girl power type of song.
Annie Lennox, man.
Yeah, but yeah. Annie Lennox, she's just, like I said, an amazing, amazing talent.
My last foundational one, who's still putting out new albums, is Missy Elliott. I had to have Missy Elliott.
Yeah, I would put her as foundational, too. That's why I said, even though she came along later, I agree with you on that.
Came out in the 90s in a very male-dominated, highly misogynist, and still is in some respects.
Yep.
Musician as hip-hop. But she's very powerful, very, not just the sexuality, but the powerful woman voice in hip-hop, really strong. The song I chose that kind of embodies Missy Elliott is They Don't Want to Fuck With Me, which is off of Super Duper Fly, which is her, iconic record. And it just puts her stamp on the hip-hop industry and is like, I'm taking over. Here I am. Get ready. And, from then on, it was just, meteoric rise.
Yeah.
Elliot. But and she's putting out stuff. She took a long time off. She's putting out stuff now, which is good to see. But yeah, I had to have Missy Elliott on there.
That's a great pick. That's a great pick. Like I said, she took some time off for a while. Yeah.
She did.
But I remember 2000, she was 2000, 2001. Yeah, it was like.
I think she had some health issues, which made it hard to like record in the studio for long periods of time.
Yeah.
She'd be putting out singles here and there, but she put out like a five song record recently, so that's good.
Yeah, you know, she had that nickname, Missy Misdemeanor Elliott.
Oh, Missy's the best.
Yeah.
I was just gonna do a quick cigar update.
Yeah, I was gonna say before we get to.
That's where I'm at. It's still doing really well. Like the notes I wrote down as we were going get a lot of like as it progresses, a lot of that graham cracker
like, is the one that comes to mind. Yeah.
Some wood. It's still really, it's not running out of gas. It's still performing quite well, I think.
I agree. A little bit of pepper you get around the midway point. There's a slight plum note in the background.
Yeah.
All the last Cumbre cigars, a lot of them have that plum note. I think that's something that comes from the Piloto Cubano is my guess, which that's kind of the staple of all the Las Cumbres tobaccos. They use Piloto Cubano as a seed that they grow in the Dominican Republic, for folks who don't know. And Jose, he loves that. You know, he loves that. And I'm sure, you know, Emma found that through Jose. And, you know, this cigar, what I like about this cigar, it's very hard to get, and this is really more of a double Corona than a Churchill. It's very hard to get a good 7x52 cigar. Is what I'll say. Because they run out of gas. They run out of flavor. And medium, how's the smoothness for you at this point?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's still not pretty smooth.
It's not harsh, nothing.
No, it's still pretty smooth, yeah. It's not a rough cigar. If you got a couple hours to kill like we are tonight, it's a good cigar. It really is.
Go ahead.
Yep.
I think the thing is I'm used to smoking a lot of like heavier cigars in this size, and what happens, I find, is you get all that upfront pepper blast, bang, all that flavor comes out like a freight train.
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to here, like it's just harsh and gone.
Yeah.
Whereas this is sort of changed and maintained nuance throughout the whole time.
Yeah.
And maybe that's down to like they blended it for this size, as opposed to like trying to kick a blend up. You know.
Yeah, no, I because like I said, this was the only size that was originally planned to be released in the Freya 12. And then that Devlin came out, that 5x46 last year. That was something they worked on afterwards, trying to get that. They had to kind of take that blend and get it into a smaller size and kind of keep the same profile of it. And that cigar loses some of the smoothness, though, is what you're going to see because of the smaller ring.
I think
I favor the Churchill in this one.
I think, and let me know what you think, Will, but I think like when I have a 6x60, the 6x60s that I like are cigars that are blended for a 6x60 as opposed to cigars that do a line extension into a 6x60.
Completely agree with that. But I'm going to say the same thing about a Lancero too.
Yeah.
If they try to take sometimes a blend that wasn't meant to be a Lancero, here's what happens. They have to, with the 60, they have to add something, right, in the filler because they got to have more filler. It's sometimes hard. In the Lancero, it's even tougher. They got to take it out. And sometimes they got to take, or they can't get a true Lancero and they make it a 42. So it's not a true Lancero.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I agree. You know, I like when a cigar is blended to the size. And that's why I think with this Freya 12, it's a very good cigar.
No, it's very good. Good pick, Will. Now, for time, we'll just rip through these. So I'll just do my quick five, and then you can do your quick five.
Uh-huh.
So these, we want to do some modern ones just because there's a lot of great women music coming out, like excellent women music. I think we talked, Will, our top songs for last year, like I think like 7 out of our top 10 were all like female artists.
I'm going to mention one. It was the Year of the Woman last year. There was no question when we did it. It was one of the best years for women ever. Last year.
So I would be remiss not to mention, so I'll just rip through them. So my first one is Beyonce, which is like almost, you know, it goes without saying. So the song I have for her is Formation, is sort of her key song. A lot of her activism and stuff has really kicked off in the past, I'd say 10 years, last two or three albums. So I picked that one. She's still like, you know, an icon.
Yeah.
Courtney Barnett. Australian.
You've
woman.
Always been high on her, yeah.
High on Courtney Barnett. In the Patti Smith vein, has played with Patti Smith when she toured out here. The track I chose is Nameless Faceless.
There you go.
Which is off of her record, Tell Me How You Really Feel, because it's about toxic masculinity, explores gender in society. To give you an idea of the feminist tilt this record has, one of the songs on it that I almost chose, but I'm kind of half choosing it anyway, is called I'm Not Your Mother, I'm Not Your Bitch, is the name of the song. So she, you know, a definite voice there, a great, I love her to death, great singer. The Chicks, formerly known as the Dixie Chicks, now they dropped that, they're the Chicks.
Yep.
The record dropped yesterday, no, 2 days ago. It's amazing. I love it.
I haven't heard it yet, so yeah, you're ahead of me on it.
Much like Dolly Parton taking on a male-dominated, you know, industry like country, much like Dolly Parton had songs boycotted. This was during the whole, like, Bush administration, had records boycotted, and then went away for a long time. Came back to do stuff with Beyonce, and now I'm back with an album that talks about race, feminism, domestic violence. It is great. I picked the title track, Gaslighter, which I think is an amazing song. That's the title track of their record. Taylor Swift, I just said, picking up the torch from Madonna as like sort of like pop icon. Lots of pro-feminist sort of ideas with her and her brand. And you know, just, I guess she's more the pop icon for that sort of like my daughter loves her, like that kind of like, 12 to like 25 year old sort of, women in music really like her. I love the album 1989 is an amazing pop album. So I picked Wonderland as her song after that. And hey, the last
question before we go.
Yep.
Would you make a case that she was the pop artist of the last decade?
I would say Beyonce still.
Okay, I mean, but you could make
a
case.
Close.
You could make a case, though, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You could definitely make a case.
And I'm talking overall, not just female, yeah.
Yeah.
You could make a case for both, I agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would say you could definitely make a case.
Yep.
It'd be one and two. I mean, it'd be pretty close.
Yep.
And my last one is Lizzo in the Missy Elliott vibe. Missy Elliott even guest stars on one of her songs. So Lizzo is a big power in hip hop. And so she does a lot of stuff with Megan Thee Stallion, who's also a big power in hip hop. The song I chose for Lizzo is Like a Girl, which is off of 'Cause I Love You.
Yeah, that was a good pick.
Those are modern ones to take a look at. And how about you, Coop?
Okay. I'm going to start off with, she's not a solo artist, right? But she's a key component to one of the most successful bands of the last 10 years. And that's Regine Chiasung of Arcade Fire.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone who's involved. Her and her husband, Wim Butler, they're the leaders of Arcade Fire. She's integrally involved with that band. And I picked Sprawl 2, Mountains Beyond Mountains. This song's all Regine. It's just, her voice is beautiful. The song is beautiful. And that's her, I mean, just anytime I see Arcade Fire perform live, that's the song I want to hear, and I want to hear her vocals on that. So, name you might not know, she's from Canada, but Arcade Fire, she's a big part of Arcade Fire. This was my number two song actually for last year. It's by Jenny Lewis. Red Bull and Hennessy was the song. Jenny Lewis is like an indie rock artist who kind of has been on that indie scene for a long time. Maybe not necessarily have had the big hit, but I think she's been a big part of that indie rock scene of the last 10 years. She's been involved with a lot of, bands, but Red Bull and Hennessy was her solo work she did last year. Great song. Just a great song. It's got that indie acoustic type of work to it. This one you're going to laugh at me at, Dave. And the audience is going to laugh at me. Ashley Simpson.
Hey, preach, man.
Listen. She got thrown on a bus. She lip-synced. She got thrown on a bus on that. Right? I don't think she even wanted the lip-sync, right? How many artists have lip-synced? Unfortunately, it went wrong for her. I am not going to hold that against her. She's edgy. She's kind of got that, you know, that generation, that post-millennial type of thing. She's Diana Ross's daughter-in-law, by the way.
Mm.
Yep. Pieces of Me it's a great song. So it's kind of a little more of an emotional type of song. And then she's got La La, which is that edgy kind of rebellious type of song. You know, so Ashley Simpson to me gets a big check mark, and I'd love to see her and Diana do a duet at some point, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah. I've mentioned this artist, I think I mentioned her on the Live Aid show, Joss Stone. Mm-hmm. Soul music, very soul, very, she's keeping the soul alive in soul music today. Just very underrated artist, just multi-talented on all aspects. She has a song called Girl They Won't Believe It. It's a classic Motown throwback type song. With a little bit of modern spice put in there. So Joss Stone is my other one. And finally, Amy Winehouse.
Ah, yep.
You know, Mark Ronson put her on the map. He basically was working a covers album at the time. And I guess he ran into Amy Winehouse at the time he was doing this. And he asked her, you know, hey, would you be willing to be a part of this, you know, be a part of my covers album, right? And she said, sure. And I think she was the one who suggested to do the song Valerie. Now, Valerie was kind of a song already that was by a band called the Zootens, right? And they had a version of it. But I guess Amy had something in her mind how she wanted to do this song, right? She just put a whole different spin on it. That soulful voice she brings in there. Ronson comes in. He brings in the whole kind of some of the horns in there and everything. And for folks who don't know Mark Ronson, he's a DJ. He's like one of these super DJs who's gone into music production. He's a force in the music business. Bruno Mars has worked with him. Ronson called her one of the best singers he ever worked with. I mean, that's a big compliment coming from but, you know, Valerie, I always consider her song. Love is a Losing Game, Rehab are just songs. I hope Valerie is not the Jinx song, like, because right. Naya Rivera, who I think did the next best cover of it, passed away. Mm. So I really hope. But those were my picks. Seth mentioned, I'll mention his. I think these are all ones you'll like. He mentioned Jewel. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. And Lana Del Rey.
Mm-hmm.
I know my son Peter loves, he's a huge fan of Florence and the Machine, Florence Welch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Adele.
Yeah.
Seth really went kind of more modern with that. Jewel, I kind of put on that border of foundation, but I'll put her in the modern. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, good work. Speaking of modern, we're at the New Music 45.
Yeah, and we should mention, of course, Cigar Hustler, and a great store located in Deltona, Florida. Mike and his brother Greg, you know, again, you're looking for great boutique cigars, small batch releases. Cigar Hustler is the place to go, and if you can't get there in person, cigarhustler.com. They even shipped to Australia, Dave.
That's right.
Like I said, if you can't get to the store, they have a nice selection. Get on their mailing list as well. They do a great job there. Of course, check out the A Cigar Hustlers podcast as well. I really like their podcast. It's so real what they do. They don't hold back either on that podcast. So.
No. And just to let people know, all you fans of cigars out there, so they just got the new Las Calaveras that is in stock.
I am in possession of it right now.
Online. Mine is in the mail. Mine is ordered.
Do we know if it's out of the States yet?
I don't think it is. but it will be eventually.
Yeah.
Also, if you're a big Romacraft fan, they have... Old Man in the Sea, which is the Lancero of the Neanderthal, which...
No, Old Man in the Sea is Tatuai.
Oh, no, it's... what's it called? What's the Lancero of the...
The OM.
The OM, sorry.
Yeah, the OM's the Lancero, yeah.
The OM, so that's... That's in. And I know a lot of that. I've been looking for that for a while. That's in. So you can get.
Have you smoked that yet?
I have not.
Okay, it's going to be different than the regular Neanderthal. I'll just say that. Yeah, I'll just kind of tell you. That's a Lancero version in the Neanderthal, so I'll kind of give you a little hint of that.
I am interested to see what it's like. It's just been really hard for me to get it until now.
They don't make a lot of them either.
No.
Yeah.
And they also have, as people know, I'm a big Candela fan. They have the Aroma Candela. They just got some Morian, back in stock.
One of the best Candelas ever made. I mean, I think we could...
So and if you're a Roma fan, get in there and get one.
Yeah, and if you're not a cigar person, you don't know what a Candela is. It's a green wrapper.
It's so good, Will.
Yeah, Dave is one of the foremost experts of Candela wrapper in the world in cigar media. So, and I'm not kidding about that. Dave knows his Candela.
It's because I'm the only one that likes him.
Yeah.
I love him. But new music. Side A, I'm going with women in music because it's women in music.
Yeah.
So the first one is by a woman that goes by the name of Chai, C-H-A-I-I. And she's a electronic dance.
I love this.
Artist and rapper in New Zealand. Her song I have is called Light Switch, and it's off the EP Light Switch. And just be on the lookout for her, I reckon.
Yep.
Good song there. And the side B... There's a band called Haim that's been out for a while. H-A-I-M.
They're really good. They were almost on my list last year. They are really good.
The reason they're called Haim is because it's sisters.
Haim, yeah.
S, Danielle, and Alana Haim.
Yep.
And the title of their record is called Women in Music Part 3. So you got to – and the track I chose is called Los Angeles. So that came out couple months ago. So that's out. And podcast to listen to, we always like to feature a podcast. A lot of these women artists have their own podcast on a show called Encyclopedia Womanica. It's a show that features women in history by the title, and they do shows on a lot of the artists we talked about. So if you want to know more about their life, check out Encyclopedia Womanica. They'll have episodes on them. And they're quite interesting. So check that out.
Yeah, definitely. Haim is a band folks need to check out, too.
Yeah, I think they have a couple records out.
Yeah, they do. They've had some good... They're starting to get a lot of attention right now. Yeah, I agree. These are good picks. Before we kind of get back to... I want to get back to the score before we close out. Yep. There were so many artists I think we left off, Dave, that I'm thinking like we didn't mention, like, and I'll rattle a couple we didn't mention. Mention like Tina Turner.
Nope.
I almost had Pink on my list as well.
Yep.
So we didn't, and we really probably, except for Dolly, we didn't really go down the whole country route as well.
No, Loretta Lynn.
Yeah, Loretta
McIntyre.
Yep. Carrie Underwood.
Yep.
Faith Hill. I mean, there's a lot we can – there's probably another show we could do this at some point, you know. Not to – except I'm sure we left off a lot, in basically a little under 2 hours doing a show.
Oh, yeah. Bikini Kill, like the whole Riot Girl thing.
Yeah.
That started a lot of women in music.
Yeah.
Bikini Kill, great line by the head on the – she said when she formed the band – she just got all her friends together, and then they learned how to play the instruments. So I thought that was always a good line.
Yeah. Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah. Yes.
We didn't mention her. We didn't mention Sheena Easton. I think she's Cyndi Lauper of the 80s.
Yep, Cyndi Lauper, Sheena Easton.
There was a lot.
Just a lot. And on the song list... for the show, I'll try and put on some like other songs that we sort of have mentioned in passing as well.
Yep. No, that's like I said, there was a lot to cover here for sure. So like I said, I think we can easily go back and at some point in down the road, do another one of these and fill it up with plenty of good music.
But you know what you can do, Will? You can email Will and I what you think, who we miss. You can email me at cigarjukebox@gmail.com.
Yeah. Or coop@cigar-coop.com.
Because I thought about that the other day. I don't say the email enough.
Yeah, we don't say the email enough. Yeah. Yeah, I could say send the complaints to Dave, but you can send them to me. That's okay.
Send the cigars to me as well.
Yeah, we're all about the free samples here, right? So, because that's all we do. But so, Dave, give us the final thoughts on the Freya 12.
I really like it. Like I'm saying, like I got mine. Like look at that construction still.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Great combustion. Great draw. By the way, a great draw off this 7x52 cigar. There's a lot of tobacco to draw through here.
And I have a V cut, and it's going really well.
Yeah, I went traditional. I went more traditional. I'm a little bit of a wet smoker, as you can see, but yeah.
I mean, I think for where I'm at right now, like it's getting a bit more woody and a bit more of a bite, but it's not harsh. Like, it's still enjoyable.
It's still enjoyable. Yeah, some of the graham cracker and a little bit of that plum sweetness is going to subside by this point. But the flavor, it's still good, yeah. I did a really good bit.
Mm. And I forgot to mention on it, I really like that little pigtail on it.
That's a yeah. You know, it's a small pigtail. We didn't mention that at the beginning. And then on the Devlin, the pigtail's a little more prominent because it's a smaller cap on there.
See, usually with most cigars this size, I would have tossed it before now because it'd just be too harsh.
Yeah, no, I agree. Not this case. I figured, and I have more of these, so I could put another round of these in for you.
You know, Will, question without notice. Like, if people pick this up in the States, I'm assuming they can. Do you know if they can or no?
Yeah, they can. I would do a little Googling for it. But they can pick it up in the States. I want to say Sanja's Smoke Shop in New Jersey has it. Sanj. That's a place you could probably go for that. They were a big, when they were living in the States up in New Jersey, Jose would hang out there all the time. So they did a lot of, so I'm assuming they have this cigar.
But if you just type in, Freya by US, I'm sure places will pop up.
Yeah. You know, when I went to Sweden, I had to pick a hotel to go to, and the hotel I picked was Freys, right?
Ah.
It was the male counterpart. And it was because of this cigar.
Nice.
Right. Cause I knew about this brand. Actually, the Freya 12 wasn't out. Well, it just had come out when I went there, but the Freya line had been out for a few years already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should give Emma some money for that.
They should. Emma. Yeah, they should. Yeah. Emma's there's just one. Emma and Jose are wonderful people. Yeah.
Go ahead. What can people look forward to in the upcoming shows, Coop, as we head out?
Yeah, so I think we'll mention we're recording, I believe, next week. We're going to be bringing in special guest, the one and only Master Sensei, Erica Thompson, and we're going to do a show on a genre, which we haven't. Well, we did one. We did heavy metal. But this time we're picking ska. And it's an interesting history with ska. And I think I know you were doing some of the prep work, and you broke it down really good, Dave, with this history. And Eric's got a very unique musical profile, and I thought he would be perfect for this show.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. Like, the history of ska is fascinating. It is fascinating.
I mean, Nick, we won't spoil it too much, but it goes back to another – it's an offshoot of a very popular type of music, so – and it kind of took on its life of its own. So,
fascinating.
Yeah, so definitely you're going to want to tune in for that one. We also have August shows. Right now we're doing another Arbum Archaeology. It's going to be U2's Unforgettable Fire. I got to remind Hector about that show.
Yep.
And then we have the Little Richard Tribute Show. We're going to bring on another member of our team, Bear DePlessis, who does special edition with me, who's got some deep knowledge of Little Richard. So he wanted to do that show, and I said, let's get this one in. So we may change things up depending. I think the ska show is pretty much to go for next week. But, if things happen or things break a certain way, we may revolve the schedule. But we're filled up for the rest of the year right now.
Yeah. And just to let you know that Led Zeppelin, the winner of the Battle of the Bands, will get its own show. It's just a scheduling thing.
Yeah. We're going to do a whole – we'll go through the whole history of Led Zeppelin on that show.
Yeah.
Didn't do. We talked a lot, but we talked about one album. But I want to go through the whole history of them, and I think that will be a very interesting. So I think we'll have something for the fall on that. We'll shift some stuff around with that as well. But yeah, and then Led Zeppelin will have its day in the sun, so to speak, for winning the Battle of the Bands. All right, Dave. Anything else?
No, just, yeah, thanks. A lot of music to get through, but great show.
Great
as
show.
Always,
always love doing, yeah, always, yeah, I love doing this show. So yeah, again, thanks to everybody, for tuning in and, to our, Women in Music show. And that's going to wrap up Primetime Jukebox episode 14 Into the Annals of History for July 2020. We'll see everybody probably later this month. With episode 15 of Scott Show. Have a great day or night or wherever you're listening to this, and we'll see you soon.